Y'all already know what time it is. That is right, folks. It's time for Alien Radio with your host, myself, and I, Diggity Dave. We're brought to you by newtherapy.bandcamp.com. K-N-E-W-T-H-E-R-A-P-Y. Just pop in there, drop a couple things on some songs, download them in any file format you wish. MP3s, WAVs, CPCCs, LSDs, ATVs, and anything else you can want to download it in. Helps me pay for gum with those dollars on the music. No, it helps me continue to do more free podcasts and awesome music, all independent. Anyway, folks, on this podcast, I ramble and ramble about music. Just some things about music that I think and my personal philosophy and my take for it. It gets a little dark at the end, but hey, it's just for entertainment. It's just me speaking my mind, folks. I'm not dead set in any of these beliefs. It's just me spitballing some things. I mean, I do believe music has a big part of the community, and like a tremendous power should be appreciated, respected, and not abused and neglected. But that's most things in life, so listen up and enjoy it. Check out newtherapy.bandcamp.com. Send us an email at alienradiopodcast@gmail.com. Talk to the show. Some questions, funny little quidbits, or things you would like to talk about. All right, folks. Also, check out angryangelenergy.com. Angry Angel is the only energy drink that I drink with 50 calories, B vitamins, CoQ10. CoQ10 is the spark plug of your body's engine. So make sure you get some Angry Angel Energy. Whole Foods. Atlanta to North Carolina. And it is another episode of the Alien Radio Podcast. If you're watching this on my Instagram, which nobody is right now, I just restarted the feed on the computer. I wanted the vocals to be louder in my ear holes and ready to go. We got a couple Miller Lights. We're kicking the day off right. We're sitting here. We're talking about music. That's the focus of this one. I want to talk about how I'm looking at the culture of music and the importance that I hold in music. One of the most important things that I think in music that is currently, seems to be deteriorating is a sing-along song, like a song where everybody sings along. Some of the most recenter kind of ones, there was a phase where Jack Johnson had some. There was in like the early thousands, late thousands, some In Between Dreams, Brush Fire Fairy Tales. I mean, one of the cool things about old Jackie J is that everybody liked his kind of whispery, whimsical, no combination of words that I put on a back of a kind of a flowy voice. I mean, it had a very laid back, chill Hawaii kind of type. It was interesting to study his evolution of music because while his first, I don't know what it was, his first albums had a very strong, I mean, even a couple songs on and On, which is like his first, I think his first record, at least on Brushfire or whatever, is his record label, had a lot of sing-along type songs. I mean, it had a lot of real chill melodies and stuff that was pretty groovy. And then he started getting into like playing with electric guitars, started having G Love in the special sauce. He started having different features, like featured artists and Ben Harper. I mean, some of the greatest, like, I love Jack Johnson and Ben Harper on, I can't remember exactly which song, but I mean, I've seen like live. I bought some Jack Johnson live shit. He had some sing-alongs. Mumford & Sons, man, they had some sing-alongs, but that was, they were a victim of the radio. Or not the radio, well, I guess the radio and the machine, the music industry machine that, I get it. I mean, you gotta get all these people that aren't talented to have jobs, and they gotta support the people with the talent to have the jobs. I mean, it's like I understand where it would come in. I mean, I do everything myself, and it's fucking exhausting. I record the music, write the songs, fucking mix, master, edit, I paint the fucking pictures that are the covers that you see online. I mean, I just started at that. I mean, I would like to get in Photoshop, maybe get some realistic shit, but at the end of the day, I use the photos or the pictures because, first of all, they came from me, and they kind of reflect the theme a lot of times because I have so many different paintings I could choose from. Plus, it's always good just to throw it up there and just, get that kind of thing out there in case I ever wanted to slang some paintings on the side, which brings me to my point is like, I'm like a modern-day Van Gogh of music. I can't even say that, though, because, to be honest, I've sold some music. So, I mean, that's actually a little in fact. I mean, they say Van Gogh didn't sell any paintings, but he did sell. I mean, he sold a couple, man. He definitely sold one that he would that's famous. It's some red fucking harvest fucking picture where he's out there. It's actually a pretty good one. I mean, some lady bought it for like $1,000 or something. He used to get a lot of his money from his brother, who was an art dealer, and it's kind of bizarre that you would think that Van Gogh's brother would be sending him all this money if he wasn't producing anything. So he, you know, there's always that possibility that Theo was like selling Van Gogh's paintings, just being like, "Ah, you're not selling them right now, man. But here's a $500 piece. Keep going," because he didn't want to discourage him. I mean, this is before the internet. This is before, I think they just invented trains and shit. Maybe there were some automobiles early in, like, Van Gogh was like 1800s. I believe there was definitely trains. I don't think, because he had paintings of trains and like horse coaches and shit like that. So it was, you know, I mean, he had to be selling some shit. You know, his brother just didn't want him to know that his fame was grown, because most people, when they get famous, their art fucking takes down. And that's really what I want to talk about. Is that's why I've always sympathized with the idea of a Van Gogh type existence, where you just do something purely because you're fucking good at it and you're the best at it, ideally, or you're inventing something, you're revolutionary in that kind of sense, you're maybe like a pioneer in a new style. Anyway, when you're fucking good at it, like Van Gogh was. You wouldn't really want to, like, sacrifice that shit. Now, there is the opposite. I mean, you can get too famous and end up fucking shooting yourself, or hanging yourself while you're jacking off, like so many of them do. Rest in peace to all those bitches. Don't put that shit on me. I get it. You know, you're just real famous out there, and people are, you know, like, always wanting your shit. You never get a time alone and everything like that, so you don't want to do it. But then there's the other thing, where you're, like, fucking the best at something, and nobody pays attention to it. You know, and it really comes down to, like, you really don't want the either. You want some kind of in-between kind of vibe. And it's rare that even happens. I mean, you want to be like a fucking cover band, like these fucking old 80s cover bands. People still play 80s music. Living on a prayer. That might be 90s, like Guns N' Roses. Technically, call Guns N' Roses 80, because, like, bomb, 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 ta-ka-ta. Your daddy works in porno, and your mother's on the phone. I mean, it was like 90s when they released it, but they had an album in the 89, so it's whatever. But what I'm saying is, the middle safe road would be like being like a Chris Stapleton before he decided to jump into fame, or like a Sia. Like, where they just write songs and they just give it to this people, and then, like, then they it's such a weird, like, it's like a music has become like a political thing so much, because they want it to, they get these massive reaches, right? You get these, I don't even remember which one I was drinking, but you get these massive reaches of, I mean, 20 million followers on Instagram, right? Why would we not use that politically? You know what I mean? It's kind of scary, because it's never really happened until kind of recently. I mean, there's been degrees of it, and we're kind of learning about the effects of the internet fame and the internet manipulation. And I mean, everyone says, without a doubt, I mean, we wouldn't have the current political climate without the internet, for sure. For better or for worse. But what I'm saying is, it's like a kind of a weird, you got all these little people that are like costume directors, set designers, light runners, and you get them into this team, this fucking machine that carries around this one dude, and so, or one dude in a modern sense, a band in the old sense, but still, like, everybody picks the fucking singer as like Jesus. Like, fucking singing is Jesus. Singing isn't Jesus at all, man. It's just using what your fucking voice is. I mean, I was never a singer until 8 years ago, 7 years ago, 20 years ago, or not 20 years ago, when I was 20, so about, I'm 27 now. I mean, I'd sang some before, and I had almost won some auditions for, like, school fucking plays in, like, elementary school before I even realized it. Fuck all that. No offense, just not to me. But what it really comes down to, in my opinion, of like singing in general, at least the people that I like, I mean, it becomes a form of hypnosis, okay? And this is actually a topic I was going to get into. I kind of jumped from sing-alongs, show notes. I told you, folks, I barely use these fucking things. But basically, okay, sing-alongs, for example. We'll segue them together. So you're singing a song that somebody else wrote. And some Dave Grohl quote I saw on Instagram today said, "The beauty about singing to 85,000 people is you get 85,000 people singing back for a different reason." Especially if you write a song that you're wanting people to sing back. I mean, there's definitely those guys. There's people that write a song that's like, "We want a party," or fucking like Drake, dude. "I told her I love you, only my bed and my mama." Like, the fuck kind of song is that? It's an anti-love song. I mean, the idea of a love song is you're supposed to say you love them. And if they're like, "I only love my bed and my mama," that means I don't love you. It means you don't love the audience, which means, who the fuck are you, man? And why is this guy got a voice? And why does nobody question the integrity of somebody with a voice? Hypnosis. So what it is you get into a zone. It activates your brain. I mean, there's the human ear itself is developed in a certain way that it can differentiate human voices from minuscule amounts. That's why they always put those scoop, whoop, whoop, boopity, scoopity, whoop, arr, in songs, because it catches your attention. So if the beat was just going, it gets you engaged. More importantly, the human scream hits a certain decibel, like the it has a certain frequency that resonates into your cerebellum, goes up into your limbic system. Shout out to Dane Cook for that. I think I stole his bit right there. But anyway, that is how it works. It goes into your ear canal, tickles those little hairs, and you're like, oh, somebody's in trouble. And I wrote about that. I actually have that in my novella, A Spark in Time, coming soon to bookstores, not Amazon, but online bookstores at diggity.com, which I don't have. It's not even real. But anyway, what I'm saying is, the human voice itself, right, is your brain has developed over thousands of years to resonate and understand the intricacies of human voices. That's why we have different voices that we listen to and different voices that we like, and that's why more than one person we'll be like, oh, I love this voice, or I don't like this voice, or the convoluted construction of a show called The Voice, where they just make it all about the human voice. I mean, they make it seem as if it's some kind of Jesus black magic fucking, we need a voice, right? The voice. And so it puts all the emphasis on the voice. Meanwhile, the computers fucking destroy everything. They destroyed The Voice too. I mean, most of the shows on The Voice are just pre-recorded fucking spoofs. It's like the ultimate karaoke. You go out there and you sing some song, you do it in a different way, they get some lighting behind you and they melodyne your fucking voice. So that's what I want to talk about, is the hypnosis that music has caused. And so it's not like a you're getting sleepy type of hypnosis. But rather, it just puts you into an altered state in certain circumstances. Now, there is music that you listen to when you're sober, and it has a certain effect. And then you get drunk, or you smoke some weed, and then you notice details that you didn't know, or you hear it in a different way. A lot of times when I'm mixing down music, it'll be either my own or somebody else's music. It might even be just recorded on an iPhone. But if I have about like 15 beers, smoke a cigarette and a joint, and I'm laying on the ground and I'm going in and out of consciousness, but I could still maintain the song, like consciousness to hear the song, I will hear it all around me in an absorption way. Like everything in my body will be, even if I'm using headphones, it'll be in there. But that's just your ears, right? So, like, a lot of people don't realize just your ears, which are distinguishing, like, human voices and higher pitch frequencies. There is also the phenomena in which your chest cavity, the air in your lungs, right? It's like a couple balloons. And if you've ever put a balloon next to a speaker and felt the balloon, you can feel the vibrations. So there is multiple ways that music is absorbed in your body, right? And it's there's these certain receptors. You got the kick drum. Kick drum is this is actually more of like a hi-hat or like a, anyway, but the kick drum, like that's modeled after the human heartbeat. And I've said this before on podcasts, but this is tying it all together. And if you haven't heard it before, then you're hearing it now. The human heartbeat, one of the funny things is like in the womb or like right after birth, like human females have a heartbeat closer to like 140 BPM. So it's like, it's like favorite for dubstep, and that's what like that kind of idea of like 140 BPM somewhere in the 130, where like a male baby will be closer to like 89 to 90 BPMs, which is more like a, it's like a trap trap rap song. So right from the birth, there was a human biorhythm, and that's actually what I wanted to talk about too. There's a human biorhythm, okay? There was a pace by which your heart is always beating, and in certain situations, it's, I gotta get rid of this pen. I'm fucking around. There's a human biorhythm, and it goes, I mean, from the synapses in your brain firing to the rhythm of the speech that I'm saying, to the way that I walk, right? And a lot of people walk close to around 120 BPMs. It's just like a weird phenomena that people seem to walk as like their normal walking speed. And that's why so many songs from the invention of the earbud and headphones changed the way that music was created, because they change, like music is always, when you're breaking it down and you got too many fuckers in the kitchen and you're not really just trying to express or reveal divine truths or something, when you got all these faggots that depend on your fucking, that depend on, I use it like Trippy Red says, faggot ain't a fucking sexuality, fuck whoever you want, I'm just talking about a certain thing, it's beyond it. But, if you're, like, for example, when they had record players, right, that was like the first time you could have me, I mean, or Edison cylinders, but they sounded like shit, let's be honest. Record players were the first time people could listen to music outside of a place where they perform music. That's why before then, they would make these giant venues that music would resonate around, and that's why they made the music to resonate around these buildings. They would make the BPMs of the woodwinds and strings and everything in the room, they would play it to the room. And that's the main thing about like how they would create classical music. I mean, if you say you don't like classical music, first of all, you're not hearing the original people doing it. You're not hearing the original orchestra conducted by the fucking composer. And you're not, first of all, you're never in the fucking sitting. I mean, you might be in a movie theater. That's pretty good. They know what they're doing when it comes to putting classical pieces into the movies to make it fit and make you feel a certain way. Classical music does get you feeling a certain way because they would hack into your biorhythms. I mean, Pythagoras in his Music of the Spheres, Pythagoras used the, he developed the jackhammer. It was a blacksmith bell, and he would figure out like, oh, if you have certain size anvils, they make certain sounds, and he would figure out mathematically how to produce tones and octaves, and everything would get all scientific, right? Which is good, because I like that the scientific versions of music, that they would create the palette, right? Science creates the palette, and the musician uses the palette to paint the picture. In most circumstances, up until I would say, when technology really started to take over music, when recording happened, then you were bringing science into the creation of music. So, for all intents and purposes and bullshit, we're just going to go from the 50s as like when I would consider technology getting into music, because you would hear like the rock and roll bands start to be recorded. They started putting mics in front of amplifiers, and eventually they invented direct inputs, which is where you take your guitar and plug it straight into a mixing board, and later a computer. So that was, for all intents and purposes, the original musicians, you know, they would, you weren't walking around listening to Bach. Yeah, you weren't fucking your girl to Mozart, unless you could afford that. You know, that's why they used to have those balconies, draw the curtain. People be fucking up there. You'd be like, I'm going to rent this out privately. They're like, why? Because I want to, bitch. Now, come only back when you got the wine. Which is funny. I always like to think about it is like until they had airtight containers, like they really didn't have carbonated beer. People always think of beer as like carbonated. I mean, it would be lightly carbonated because it would still be alive when you were drinking a lot of time. But until you put it in a bottle and pressurize that shit, it was probably flat. So if it really came down to flat beer or wine, I'd drink the wine because you have to drink a lot less flat liquid to get drunk. But fucking now that they got fucking beer, I would never drink wine. I mean, I like it sometimes, but I've never really had wine where I was like, whoa, I'm going to drink this all the time. It makes my mouth dry and the tannins, and I'm not a big fan. But so you would rent out a balcony to fuck to Mozart, right? That's the best case scenario for like how people even think. I mean, there's no Barry White or any of that Otis Redding or any love-making music back in the day. But they were still hacking into biorhythms. They were taking into account that the high-pitched violins would create a certain effect. And so it became this balance of lows and highs and dynamics and pitches and harmonies and swirling creations and so they would get it in a certain way that it would all work together. But it's mentioned in Republic by Plato. He talks about music, and they were talking about making state-sponsored music, and where you have to use certain chords and certain rhythms and certain everything in order to make music that would empower soldiers and create a sense of broad, passionate nationalism. Which brings us to our original point. Ooh, listen to that, folks. There's duck in the room. Which brings us to our point about early sing-alongs. When you couldn't record a sing-along, right? When you couldn't learn the lyrics, you know, from a recording or walking down to your fucking subway and pretending you're not seeing the guy jack off on the subway next to you or the live musicians begging for their shit in a city full of shit, you would, they would have these bar tunes. They'd have bar tunes or they'd have church. Like, church was actually like what they say is the foundation of music, but them Gregorian chants, you'd be like, now got him with a boom, with a got him with a boom, with a got a da da boom, 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 something like that. But nobody was breaking into beat because they hadn't even really discovered beats. Those were like heathen things. Those were like pagan skins that they would be drumming on. But what I'm getting at is the early sing-alongs would be in church, right? Because like everybody would sing along in church, or in a slightly progressive situation, you would sing along in a bar. We like to drink with Diggity because Diggity is our mate. And when we drink with Diggity, he drinks the beer in 8, 7, 6, and you have 8, 7, 6 to finish your fucking drink, or you're a wanker, right? So there's that instance of like of what people would sing along in those days and how they would do it. But there wasn't like or it would be like a national anthem. Or it'd be like a national anthem, or it'd be a nursery rhyme, right? So it'd be like stuff like Mary had a little lamb, little lamb, a little lamb. Which is a combination of both a sing-along song, childhood brainwashing, and religious themes. Mary, the mother of God, had a little lamb, Jesus, who takes away the sins of the world, have mercy. See, but it sticks in there, right? Because there's like some weird programming. Like, even if I don't fucking have any physical, mental enjoyment of Mary had a little lamb right now, it's still in my head, right? It's a weird way that it hypnotizes and imprints itself in your brain. So we take these three concepts here. We take the human biorhythms. We take the catchy, implanting kind of hypnosis rhythms that would stick in the brain. And then you combine that with the idea that you... I was going to say the spirituality is what I got down here, because that includes the spirituality, includes like the early church themes that we found in the music. But the human biorhythms, the sing-along hypnotic nature, and the overall ability of music to connect with a group of people, all before there was recordings. What it would do is it would, you know, it would just give you like a sense of how to write to what people were, and there wasn't so much variation. I mean, if you were writing music in a community that you lived in, you wouldn't be writing music for a different audience. Like if you were writing music for a Christian-based sermon kind of feel of some kind of music, you wouldn't necessarily be writing for like a Muslim or a Jewish congregation, especially in the case of like this religious music. But what it would come down to is the three things of the human biorhythm, the sing-along nature, and then that weird ability for the human voice to be in your dome piece, right? And now, if you think about classical music, one of the things about classical music is opera would be the main singing type of music that would it would evolve, right? But they would have this pit where the band would sit in the pit, and then the stage would be behind it, and then the people would sing, and so you have to get this weird projection of the human voice that would go over into the audience, into these weird shaped rooms, conduced in a way that would make it be able to be heard. And then you would have the orchestra in the pit so that their music was slightly below. And so that when the music would rise up, it would be about the same loudness of a very talented opera singer who would sometimes get up into like 100 decibels, because like a human scream can get up to, I think, like 100 decibels. I don't know. Google it, bitches. I think I'm right, though. I'm usually kind of close. So what you would do is you basically have these humans just projecting their voice out as loud as they could in an attempt to balance it with the music. There wasn't any microphones. And so that's why a lot of the times, like this Bach and these Beethovens and all this pussy-ass shit that I consider now, I mean, I love it. I love it. And I think it's good historical record, but I think people put that too much into askew. But that's why they would have it all instrumental, mostly, because it was hard to get a voice that would sing. And then they'd have to make it to human biorhythms, and they'd have to put you into a state of hypnosis, but be able to keep that shit for like the length of the symphony or the opera or the performance, right? So it would take this intense focus of the writers and the practicers, and soloists would have to memorize these huge long passages. And really what it comes down to, in my opinion, is that these people would have a very good attention span, right? Because you would have to learn it, right? In order to learn it and play it, you'd have to have an attention span. In order to entertain people, you would have to be able to tap into their attention span. Or, if they had attention spans, you had to hypnotize them into being amazed in a state of bliss and an ongoing type of ecstasy. If I just hold my hand here, we got less of a fucking glare. Anyway, what it would do, that's for people watching on Instagram Live. New therapy. On Instagram, check it out, folks. That's where you're gonna see it till episode 50, till I learn how to get cameras and stream these motherfuckers. But anyway, this would over decades, right? So I don't know. I'm just gonna guess like 1500s, like right after the Dark Ages. I'm sure they had music and shit in between. You always have the court jester, and they would be singing songs, and the best court jesters would insult the king right to his face and not get his head chopped off. But still be able to make them laugh and entertain. This is where a lot of forms of satire came in. Be like, oh, this king's the best, he smells like shit, but then the rest of them around him smell much worse. So you're saying the king smells like shit, but you're saying he smells slightly better than everybody else. And so they would get away with it, and he'd be like, oh, he's right. The jester, you've done good tonight. You shall not sleep in the hay, but you shall sleep in a pile of leaves instead. I know how the bedbugs do prefer the hay, so you might get the mattress made of leaves that I sleep on occasionally with my mistresses. So it would be that kind of idea. So what is this? Where am I going with this? What does this fucking have to do with anything? If you're fucking listening this long, I'm sorry if this has been a shit one. It's weird for me to go in and attack music because it's such a personal thing, and I've experimented online. I've talked a lot of shit about Drake recently, that motherfucker from Canada who's got a weird monotone voice, and he does all this shit, and he's got it all. And see, but I'm a producer, so I know all the effects of music, right? So that's where it comes down to. That's where we're going with this. So the old forms of hypnosis, they don't start to wear off, they start to be outshined. They start to be outshined because, like, you could play Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. And sure, some people are like, oh, it's such a beautiful piece. I could listen to this. I'm like, well, what do? You cook food listening to it? Because I'd rather listen to a podcast while I'm cooking food if I had a choice between fucking Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, that long-ass bitch, or like a podcast where they're talking about shit like I am right now, breaking down the Moonlight Sonata. So the idea is that music is always going to be about hypnosis because unless you got a really intelligent audience who really just likes to pay attention to shit, you're going to assume that people have short attention spans and you got to keep them entertained in some kind of way. So that goes to the evolution of music, which brings us back to like the 1950s where there was microphones. You could sing and it would project out into a crowd. You know, there was a way that you could get your... you could sing over orchestras. If you want to think of like the 20s and the jazz, you would have jazz singers, blues singers. You know, you would start to have the ability for a human element to infiltrate music. Where, like, I'm not saying that there wasn't people singing before, and there's definitely people singing with acoustic guitars, but there was no way to record it. So you had to be there, and you'd have to be in a room where you could hear the guitar and the person singing. So it wasn't like these giant audiences. But when you get the electronics involved, then you start to be able to get these giant audiences. And so that becomes a new thing because you're not really hearing a human voice anytime you have a microphone. I mean, you're hearing me right now, and this is just a representation of how my voice sounds in a microphone. Now, 7 years of training has taught me how to be very consistent in my placement of the microphone, in my consistency of my voice, and in the timbre in which I find resonates best with the microphone. So really, a good singer that sings into microphones has to tune their voice to the microphone that they then hear in their head or on the speakers if they didn't have headphones, because headphones were kind of after the fact. They had big speakers before. They had little speakers that you put on your head. And so what it comes down to is when you have all this technology and the way that music sounds, it sounds different. And so it enables a different form of hypnosis because people are more willing to listen to something new that catches their attention because it activates different parts of their brain. And so that's why people like music that evolves, and that's why they like new and great stuff. And then they like stuff that they hold on to because they find something that, oh, this is what resonates with me more than anything. But it also becomes weird when music progresses, and I'm 27, so hopefully I don't ever get to the point where I'm just like, fuck these kids and their weird music. Oh wait, I already am there with this mumble rap weird crap that people play, and it's just weird. It's not that it's not good. It's just that to me, it doesn't seem like it's coming from a person. It seems like it's coming from a team of people. Somebody's making a beat, somebody's taking drugs and talking onto a microphone, and then some computer is processing it all down. But anyway, what it comes down to is a form of hypnosis. So that's where we're going to go into hypnosis in detail right now. So like I said, there was a weird thing of like how it was all instrumental because you couldn't have the vocal be amplified enough to be able to hear it in a lot of circumstances without microphones and speakers. And so then once you got microphones and speakers, it would sound new. And you could have all this high-energy electric guitars going, wow, I want to hold your hand. You know what I mean? You could hear it, and you could sing it. And you not only that, it could be fucking recorded into plastic. You could take the sounds of things and put them into plastic. And once again, like I said about microphones, you're not really hearing an exact representation. I mean, you're hearing pretty damn close because, like, honestly, vinyl technology, man, it's some interesting stuff. But you're hearing a representation. You're hearing a parallel existence of the music. Like, if you were in the studio when the Beatles were recording the music, if you went into the control room, which is where they have those big boards that everybody looks at, and they have those people smoking cigarettes and mixing it down, they're like, do it again, that kind of thing, you would hear it, and it would sound pretty similar to what's going to end up on the record if you're in the control room. But if you went into the live room, which is the actual room where the band is playing, you would hear it more like a concert, because that's the actual sounds of being live. The microphones were the processing technology. You know, I mean, there's, if you bang a cymbal, like a metal cymbal, is a clanging piece of metal. There is hundreds of frequencies all, every time that metal plate bends, right, there is different frequencies mixing with each other to make a sound, right? So even if you hit the same cymbal twice, it's going to sound similar, but it's not always going to be the exact same. When you go into the recording, into the control room, they use equalizers, which is just a fancy word for frequency modulation. Or frequency modulation is the complex word of equalizer, which is where they just take certain frequencies and they focus in certain ones and they cut out certain other frequencies. Like in cymbals, like a lot of times, like they're the loudest thing on a drum kit other than the snare drum, and sometimes even louder depending on where the microphones are. So you want to quiet the cymbals down. And so that's one of the fucking things that I hate the most about a lot of recordings. But I mean, I do like it as an art, but I just, when you see a band live, most of the time, their cymbals are just fucking playing, man. It's all representation of how the drummer is playing them. And they'll have microphones on the cymbals, and you can modulate the sounds a little bit. But if you're center stage, you're hearing the actual drums and the recordings of the drums coming out simultaneously. So you're getting even more mixing of frequencies. So what I'm saying is, if you were in the live room of when the Beatles, for an example, were recording, you would hear something different than you would hear in the control room, which is the hub of where the edited version of the song would be. And so it's a disconnect between the people creating the music, because when I'm creating the music, I get my dick gets hard. I get turned on by a certain sound that's in the live room. Like, I get turned on by the way that everything feels live. But when non-musicians driving to work every day hear their music in their car, and this is before all the modern shit of the 90s and thousands and 80s and shit, but if you're hearing something different than what is actually... Like, if you hear, like, an electric guitar, or you hear, like, a bass, or you hear, like, a drum, like raw, you're not getting very raw with it. Even live studio albums, or, like, it's called live studio because it would be a live album from a concert that they would take to the studio and do the same wizardry that they would do and edit it down a little bit. And there's no problem with it. I mean, I fucking love the way it looks. It's the difference between like a sketch, like if an artist sketches something or they take the paint and put it on there and then they spray it with the varnish to make it shine. It's just, there's always ways that you want to make everything look and sound and appear the best. So that's, there's not an issue with it. I'm just saying, in my experience in about the past 10 years, is there's a way different emphasis on live music. Like, people don't really understand, they don't connect with it. And one of the symptoms of them not connecting with the live music as much as they should is this weird desire to record it on a phone, right? So not only are you not like, you're like, oh, well, it doesn't sound as good as when I heard it on my car, so why would I pay to go there? But then you love somebody and you decide to go there, you're like, I love Drake, and you go there and you just stand there and record Drake the whole time because you're not as engaged, because you're like, it doesn't really sound like him. And so you record it, and that definitely doesn't sound like him, man. So you're just getting several degrees removed of shit, and nobody ever listens to that fucking video you take of a concert. And if you have it on Snapchat, get the fuck off with that shit. Ain't nobody want to hear your concert, shitty-ass fucking camera, fucking version of a concert with the lights. The fucking lights never even look good. But when you get these people that... You're still playing the same song with the biorhythms, right? But it's not working as well. Because the human voice, like I said, has unique features about it that cause people to catch attention. Sometimes in a live setting, that's not even enough. You could have a band playing great. But you're like, oh, they're just standing there. Why aren't they moving around? Because they're playing very technical shit, and they're trying to do it the best they can, and maybe jumping around isn't good. So you get these punk bands, or you get these rock bands that have very simple shit, where they can jump around, and they can be entertaining. And even that eventually gets to the point where it's like not enough. Because people are weird and picky, and they don't really understand what they're seeing. And so you start throwing all these lights, and smoke, and flashes, and... What it is just they're trying to stimulate every one of your senses. Not only are you feeling the bass in your chest, you're hearing the fucking music with your ears, but they want to get your eyes with these fucking flash and strobes and these colors and these videos and these fucking things behind you, which all kind of takes down. I mean, music isn't really supposed to be seen. I mean, it is supposed to be seen, but it's a fucking, it's a sound-based type of entertainment. Something like a podcast. I mean, you can watch me do a podcast, but the real idea is it's supposed to be the sound of it, which doesn't sound so good for you Instagram people because I'm fucking far from the microphone. But what it is the idea that you gotta hypnotize them. So you get these lights, you get these, these smoke machines, you get these really catchy beats, and you try to get these... You try to get these catchy songs, but it's really a form of hypnosis because you got the loud lights, you got the people moving around on stage, and you got all these distractions from the actual music. What's even worse is, like I said, people tend to get even bored of that, and so you need drugs. And so when you get drugs, you add in a third layer of hypnosis. You got the music, you got the lights, you got the fucking sounds resonating in your body. And then you got this crowd, right? So that's the other thing about these giant crowds is when you have giant crowds, it has a different form of energy that is created. I mean, if you're just sitting there listening to music by yourself, you're probably like, or you're in your car and you're like, yeah, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, driving. But when you're at a concert, there's just mayhem of everybody sitting around you. And so it all changes the experience of the song you're there to see. Especially if you're seeing somebody like Drake, who fucking doesn't even have a band, plays. I mean, they have people out there, and they might have these people that are in bands and shit. But 99% of that shit's pre-recorded, and they're just trying to hypnotize you into spending $60 on a ticket and fucking $11 on every beer. And not that there's any issue with it. It's just, it's becoming like a weird gouge that they're trying to do to people. It's just like, well, you gotta take this drug to make this shit song sound good. Like, for example... the most direct example of musical hypnosis would be this DJ culture. It's one fucker on stage who claims to be the creator of the song. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. A lot of times my favorite is you get a DJ on stage who's the DJ of the song, the producer, and you get some Swedish chick or some fucking... It's mostly Swedish chicks, like these little angelic little... Your arms are my castle, yeah. And you take these like little girls' voices and then you put them through a computer and you auto-tune them, which, like I was telling you earlier, that the human brain is designed to pick up certain frequencies. Like when I talk as a human, most people know that, oh, that's a human. Like, even if you had like human speaking a different language, you know it's a person because there's frequencies assimilated with human voice. And that's the weird thing about autotune and more specifically Melodyne. Most people don't even know about Melodyne. They just assume autotune, which is like that robot-y kind of shit. Melodyne makes you sound like a superhuman. It takes your voice and it modulates it in a way that you know it's a human talking, but it sounds like a different human. Like if I was talking on a Melodyne right now, it would sound very clean and crisp and pristine. And so it would be like my voice, and you would know it's my voice, but it would be altered in a way. And that if you didn't hear it without the Melodyne, you'd be like, well, why am I paying to see this guy? And which is like the old case of like people lip syncing. They're like, well, we can't physically hypnotize people live. We can't hypnotize them with who we are. So we have to pretend that we are this sound. And so that's why you get all these pop singers and these dancers and everybody moving around. And like you get Beyonce. It's like, get the fuck out of here. Look, I ran a fucking half marathon. And one of the things that got me through the half marathon is Audioslave, 2002. And I would run and sing that shit. And I was training running and singing for the exact reason that when I got on stage, when I get on stage next, I have the endurance not to huff and puff, because like you're not running a marathon on stage. But when you're singing while running a half marathon, you're like, man, this is fucking hard. And so when you get these fucking Beyoncés that fucking keep moving and you get these people doing these fucking dances while they're singing, you're like, first of all, fuck off. I know as a musician, y'all aren't singing because I can hear it. Second of all, the way you're moving and you're moving that much trying to sing, get the fuck out of here. Oh, that's why like my favorite thing is like in like a Lady Gaga. Well, Lady Gaga sings a lot live, especially when she sits down on the piano. Like, so they'll mix in certain songs. Like whenever you see an artist slow down and they're like, we're going to take it down to a slow number, that's when they're actually singing. Or like you get them in between, like when they're in the hype song. I'm at 11 and I want you to grab you and me. We're in a... Come on, sing it. When you get them little huffing and puffins, or they'll be like, oh, come on, sing it. Or Lady Gaga will be like, throw your paws up. Like, but it's like you get this little sound of this where they're like, oh, they're really out there doing some kind of weird cardio performance. Like the dancing is like another level of the hypnotism that comes in. So back to the DJs, right? DJs don't even have dancers, right? They don't even have singers. You'll have this one dude, rest in peace Avicii, with a microphone, and he'll be out there like, how y'all doing tonight? And it's like this weird thing, like everybody goes there and it's like you're not really going to these concerts to fucking hook up. I mean, you go there in giant groups of people, and most of these giant groups of people have like a even girl to guy ratio, and it's like, well, maybe I won't hook up with Tyler and I'll hook up with some random person. But you go there and there's these hypnotic lights, these non-biorhythm beats, because I was talking about human biorhythms, like the way that your heart beats when you're walking, when you're running. There's like the fluctuations that happen naturally within a person. And so I was actually talking on the Robbie Dooley podcast 2 days ago, and this girl said to me, I said, the problem with the DJs is you go there to this hypnotic thing where the beat is constantly always on time, which doesn't match what an actual human does. You know what I mean? Like, if I was making the song live for you, it wouldn't be perfect unless I had it run through some supercomputer that could fix it while I play, which is coming in the future. But like the idea, they already have it with like Auto-Tune Live, so you gotta watch out. They do have like live Auto-Tune and shit, so it's just like you gotta be, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with it, but anyway, she said, well, you're talking all this about the DJs and they're doing drugs. I said, the only reason people show up to these fucking these shows is to take Molly and take fucking drugs. And she said, well, what about the 60s? And I was like, yeah, that's a fair argument. I mean, there was, I'm not ever saying that drugs and music don't go together. I'm just saying that when you have a band on stage, and whether or not that band's on drugs, if everybody in the audience is on drugs, they're still getting real human input. They're getting the real energy, the rhythm coming from my brain, through my blood, through my bones, into my fingers. You're getting the rhythm, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2. You're getting the real rhythm that comes from a person. And you're getting the real rhythm of one person with 3 or 4 or 5 or however many other people are in the band. You're all syncing. And it's not on a perfect beat, but it's all together if you're good at it. If that's the whole idea of music, it's like syncing up with real humans. So you get 5 people on stage syncing up on beat, and then that is shot out into the crowd, and it's in sync with them. And so there's this energy going out and in. It's the energy we're putting out and the energy coming in. And the energy we're putting out and the energy coming in. But it's at varying degrees, right? It's not consistent. Like a DJ would be like, poof, 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 poof. Yeah! So you get this weird consistency, like a mass production kind of idea. Now, if you're not a musician, then you probably wouldn't understand the idea of getting the energy from the crowd. If you are a musician, you would understand the idea of getting energy from crowd. Or if you played sports. If you play sports, when somebody shoots a basket and you make the fucking basket, everybody goes, woo! And then you're like, yeah, you can shoot another basket. And you got the confidence and the energy from them counting on you to do it. Same thing was if you were playing like a guitar solo, right? If you're like Slash on stage and everybody knows fucking... like fucking Sweet Child of Mine solo. When that comes up, it's the adrenaline that is fed off from the crowd that goes onto Slash, but it's also the energy that he's putting out to create this chain of events. And so that doesn't happen when you have a DJ. I mean, they don't really do much, folks. I mean, they can change a little bit of it, but the whole reason you go to fucking a DJ is so that they play that fucking same song the exact same way that you know it. So you just take these drugs and you just lock into this pre-designed. It's a pre-designed frequency. And this whole episode has been about how music programs human beings because it comes from human beings and it's the biorhythms. So you take these drugs and you go to these flashing lights that put you in a trance and you have the same song that's designed to go to the lights. So you're just getting into a different space. And I'm not saying that it's a dangerous space to be in. I'm saying it's a very weird, new space that should be questioned. Like I said, everybody knows Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. Should we know Twinkle Twinkle Little Star? Like, who knows? Everybody fucking knows it. The idea is, should we be in a situation where you have to take certain drugs to enjoy a certain type of entertainment? Because everybody I know that, I'm like, I just don't like EDM. They're like, well, have you ever done Molly? I'm like, no. But I've done drugs. And I'm not going to do a drug to go to a concert. If I'm going to a concert I am going to do drugs. So it's like a weird catch-22, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, but I would like to go to something. I mean, it's weird for me because like I go to a live concert, and I know how to focus on what the drummer's doing, what the bass player's doing, what a guitar player's doing, what a singer's doing. And so if I ever got bored, which I don't get bored at concerts, like I just focus on what everybody's doing. And it's an interesting experience, but the idea of a bunch of people on this weird drug that makes this like weird empathetic I forget what they call it. What they call entheogens. I think it's entheogens. The drugs that make you feel like you love everybody, like Molly or MDA, which is like the love boat drug if you used to smoke it with pot. I think it was an entheogen. Might not be it. I believe that's it. We're going to run with it anyway. But it's like empathetic drugs that make you feel like you love everybody and you feel great and shit feels good when you touch it. And I'm not saying that there's a problem with it. I'm just saying, like, if there was like a fucking number one sign of like mass fucking brain control, probably be in a room where a bunch of people were on drugs. The music was loud, the lights were hypnotizing, and et cetera, et cetera. It'd be in a situation like it's like a clinical study. Like you sign up to go to a rave. First of all, everybody looks the same. They're all colored in this globe paint. And it's so weird how everybody just adopts it. It's like never existed, but then they're like, that's what I want to do. I want to be covered in paint and colors and lights. And not that there's a problem with it, right? But what you are missing out on is the divinity, the weird moment where somebody breaks script. You know what I mean? It's like when people go watch a stand-up comedian, a good stand-up comedian will make you think that he's just riffing off the top of his dome, that he didn't rehearse any of it, and it's just the way he feels and the way he talks. Meanwhile, they've told that same joke that you're laughing your ass off thinking, oh, I could do that. It's just him being him. They've told that shit fucking 300 times. And they've refined it along the way and getting it in the way that can deliver. Now, if they fucking see you laughing and then that moment of inspiration hits while they have that 300-time song, right? They get hit with an inspiration and they say another thing that they've never said before, but it comes to them at the moment. And then you fucking take that laughter, ha ha, whoo, and everybody starts howling because you hit them with something that you weren't expecting either. You know, so it becomes like a weird improvisational type a behavior. There are certain in the moment things that a professional can take that moment. I mean, it's like if you're an MMA fan or you're a fighter, right? You fight people all the time, but you wait for your window. And when you get your window and you're like, I didn't expect to be able to hit him in the chin, but when I saw that open up, I knew I was going to hit him in the chin. And that's the idea that they have right there, is that moment that you allow it to open up between the people involved in the situation, you know, like the crowd and shit. Like Guns N' Roses, one of the greatest things is when Axl Rose will like add in extra cuss words, like, wasting my fucking time, you know, like just throws it in there. But we got a little bit more that we're going to go into. I'm going to take a quick pause because the Instagram feed has died. So we're going to take this moment to say, this podcast is brought to you by newtherapy.bandcamp.com. That's newtherapy.bandcamp.com. Where Diggity Day records, writes, records, mixes, records, creates, and plays every instrument, every song, every sound, everything, unless he has features, which I have a lot of features. Check out Warehouse to see what I did when I was 23. In a warehouse with a bunch of fucking close friends that now we all hate each other because everybody's on drugs and we're on different life paths. I'm just kidding. I love you, Max. I love you, Brett. I love you, Joy. I love you, everybody. But check it out, newtherapy.bandcamp.com. And folks, if you're gonna click on newtherapy.bandcamp.com, I know you won't because you're lazy, fucking self-centered piece of shit who'd rather be on Facebook looking at Instagram likes while you're with your girlfriend. You know, you're sitting there with your fucking, you know, wife or fiance or fucking girlfriend. You're like, I don't want to even look at diggity shit. So I'm not gonna go newtherapy.bandcamp.com. But if you do go to newtherapy.bandcamp.com, all it takes is one click and you can name your price on all of my shit, unless it says to buy it for a certain amount. But folks, for fucking $7, you make my world that much brighter. Because right now, I'm just throwing money into this fucking hellhole of a podcast just to talk about shit that I know you guys both, A, don't know, and B, too afraid to fucking really internalize. But I'm going to keep doing it. All I ask is that you go to newtherapy.bandcamp.com, listen to the music, and check it out. And so, like, I mean, we're back. See, like, you fuckers don't even know. But we don't even have no fucking breaks in your fucking audio listening ass, bitches. What's the issue here? What am I hating on? What am I hating on? Am I hating on DJs? Hating on people making money? Am I hating on all this kind of shit? No. What I'm doing is, I have a lot of friends that are musicians, and I live in the city of Oaks, city of Raleigh, city of fucking, at least I die in Raleigh, at least I will die free kind of shit. Ride or die, motherfuckers. I get high with these motherfuckers. I know a lot of people out there hustling. Now, I do got some criticisms for a lot of musicians in Raleigh. Is they're hustling? Sure, they're hustling, but they're not spiritually hustling, man. And not that you need to be a spiritual person to fucking do music, but if you look at fucking Metallica, or you look at Slayer, or you look at fucking heavy metal music in general, that's very dark spirited shit. Or you look at fucking Jack Johnson, light spirited shit. What I'm saying is, there's a fraction of the audience, there's a fracturing of the audience, because anybody can make music and record music now, so there's like less and less of this conglomeration of people working together, which goes to my idea that, what I was talking about with Mr. RobbieDooley.com, check out his shit, RobbieDooley.com, RobbieDooley.com. I was talking to Robbie Dooley, and I was saying that I wonder, is it a positive step for humanity or a negative step for humanity to get away from the sing-along song, right? Like, should we need a song that we all can relate to? Like, is that healthy? Or is it like a weird kind of brainwashing that we subject ourselves to? For example, a lot of the sing-along songs would be drinking songs. A lot of the sing-along songs would be patriotic, nationalistic songs. Like, meant to make you feel like, we love it, we're all united. But then you got songs that would be like, she grew up in Indiana town, had a good looking mama who never was around, where she grew up tall and she grew up fine with a Mendicant of Buzz on an Indiana night. You know what I'm saying? is the idea. I mean, what I'm saying is, so I know a lot of musicians that are hustling. So that's the only reason I'm hating on these pre-recorded performances that suck out the millions and millions of dollars. Like, people like Avicii makes all this money doing all this shit, but still is empty inside because he knows what he's doing in the heart of his heart before he stabbed his ass with a fucking wine bottle. You gotta fucking really think that everything's fucking gay to fucking pop this and cut. It's like the Bible says when that guy... fucking that man with a demon used to cut himself with rocks. Like, you gotta be fucked up to kill yourself with a wine bottle. If you got Avicii money, you could get pure fucking cyanide, dude. You could take the easiest death out of any fucking suicide attempt. Why do I say cyanide? Well, Google it, folks. Don't Google cyanide death, but just Google, like, the strength of cyanide. Little fucking drop, you're fucking dead. It's quick, painless, kind of. Painless-er than a fucking wine fucking bottle, dude. A wine fucking bottle. So you're gonna tell me, why am I hating on fucking DJs? Because they fucking kill themselves with wine bottles, man. At least that's that one, you know. Maybe it was some other issues. He was drinking hard. They took out his gallbladder. Sure. Took out his liver. Sure. Or not his liver. They took out his gallbladder. His spleen. Luckily, I'm not famous, so they don't have to take any of my organs out. I drink a fucking lot. Hopefully not as much as those fucks. I can see where it goes, though. I mean, I might drink, like, a lot, but I don't drink a fuck ton. I guess if you're drinking a fuck ton, they start cutting out your shit, and you're like, at some point, when you got no spleen, no gallbladder, and a bunch of drugs in your system, you're like, fuck this wine bottle. And then you're like, fucking, I'm gonna stab myself. Which, by the way, if you're killing yourself with a wine bottle, it says foul play. So, I don't know. I always like to think that musicians don't kill themselves. I actually got this as a topic. Musician deaths, I guess we're going to tie that together between, if you're really not connecting with the people, right? You're just kind of hypnotizing the people. That creates a different energy for the hypnotist, you know? Like, there's a weird energy that would happen with, like, somebody like the Rolling Stones in their early days where they would play and then they would get all high and mighty, thinking that, yes, we're the best because they react this way. Which is kind of good when you're in competition with a bunch of other musicians who are thinking and doing the same kind of thing. So it does help you to be able to keep achieving. But not many bands are like the Rolling Stones, still able to fucking kill it. And so what it comes down to is, and this is just my opinion. Like, I know a lot of people that make music, right? And so I die on the inside every time I watch them play because I can read the people in the crowd and... they're not fucking hypnotized, right? They're not in that zone where they actually feel something. It's like a bunch of fucking SSRI, serotonin uptake re-inhibitor fucking people out there. They're like, they hate the world and they hate the fucking capitalism and they hate fucking not having any money and they hate everything and they got all these tattoos on their faces and these fucking exotic hair colors. Not that there's anything wrong with any of this, I'm just saying. There's a lack of connectivity, right? And the good thing is everybody can make music. And so everybody does make music and they put themselves into it somehow, but they really don't do it in like a commercial way where they want everybody to feel it. And so they're not getting that feeling, or they don't feel something strong enough themselves that they can make people feel things that they're afraid to feel, which is what I try to do. So if you go to newtherapy.bandcamp.com, I will make you feel things you're afraid to feel. Mostly in your asshole, and mostly with consent, all right? No, I'm just kidding, but really, what I'm saying is, when you don't get it, when you're not able to pick up the rhythm, because they're playing to their biorhythm, and all our biorhythms are out, because we're all on different drugs, and even if we're on the same drugs, and we think we love the same thing, we're all feeling it different. So what it comes down to is that whole idea. I got all these people that make music, and I love it. That's why I started this podcast. I started this podcast to get all the people that I love on music and to be able to frame it in the respective way that I look at their music, you know? And it astounds me to this day. I mean, I've only had probably 10 musicians from Raleigh on here, because that's the other thing. I'm fucking weird. No offense to anybody in Raleigh, but fuck you, Atomic Buzz. Fuck you, M. Phillips Music. Fuck you, anybody else I reach out to. I'm only reaching out to you because I know you're good and I know you're not getting the fucking respect that you deserve. It's not because I'm all high and mighty with my podcast. I pay for all this shit myself, dude. I don't get fucking anything except for Angry Angel Energy. If you want to go to Angry Angel Energy, folks, check out their delicious energy blends available in Whole Foods from North Carolina down to Georgia. But other than that, I don't got any sponsors other than New Therapy. I'm just kidding. What I'm getting at is you don't want riot-y crowds, like, unless you're fucking into heavy metal. But that's what I'm saying. It triggers a certain spot in your brain, and heavy metal music is good for killing people. It's good for being really unhappy, and it's good for going to war. Like, it's good for punching strangers in the face, as long as you're cool with maybe some stranger punching you in the face. What I'm saying is there's these different energy levels in music, and there's different energies that the musicians produce, and there's different energies that the crowds produce. And it's all about getting these energies in my circumstance and what I do in a positive way that, you know, people enjoy without getting punched. I'm not a big go kill them all kind of thing, but if I was and I was in Iraq and I wanted to kill all these kids, I'd probably listen to Motorhead. Fucking Nazi ass. It's funny if you watch the documentary on Lemmy. Rest in peace, I think. I don't know, maybe he's burning in hell right now. He's a big Jack Daniels drinker, big fucking meth doer. He would sing all these songs. Seemed like a pretty chill dude, but he would collect Nazi memorabilia, and I'm pretty sure those demons and that shit get into his skin, and then they go to people that listen. I mean, it was like there's a guy in the documentary of Lemmy, and says, or Motorhead or whatever it was Lemmy, I think it was. He said, yeah, I mean, I was in the military and really got into Motorhead. It was good going to war music. Good going to war music. Good thing is there was no autotune really in heavy metal. What am I getting at here? I'm getting at the idea that everybody makes music, but nobody relates to everybody's music. So they default to this fucking mass-produced product that they're trying to get everybody to accept as reality. But is, I mean, they're going to win, folks. As long as they keep bombarding us with this fucking Katy Perry faggot-ass music that's made by 20 people to sell 20,000 copies, you, storage almost full on the live, fuck it. But as long as you keep getting the Katy Perry cherry tree music, you know, you get this shit that's created to make people feel a certain way, and they just find something that works, and they just harp it to death. You're getting a stagnation into the evolution of music. I mean, sure, like I said, like a human voice, you're programmed to hear it a certain way. Eventually, you're going to get used to the autotune. Eventually, you're going to get used to the melodyne. And then somebody's going to come along, Diggity Dave, and they're going to sing their fucking soul and blood out. And you're either going to be so jaded you don't give a fuck, or B, I'm going to awaken your soul and unharden your heart with truth like a moth. No, I'm just kidding. Or am I? Who knows? What I'm saying is, there's like a weird disconnect in our. It's like there was only a certain amount of music, and now if you know me, I don't ever promote my music other than newtherapy.bandcamp.com, where you can find all of my music. I don't fucking pay for advertisements. I don't even play live right now because I got a bunch of music. I got my own shit, but I got very good, talented, killer musician friends, right? But they're just not ready. You know, they're really not ready to play to the level that I would demand from them. So I don't even put them up to the challenge. And I don't have money to pay people just to be like, hey, play what I say. And I don't have any intention on doing that. What I do is I have very loosely written songs that can be interpreted by the vehicle of the person playing. And if you play with music with me, as long as you kind of stick to whatever I do, which I don't even stick to anything, as long as we all appear to be on the same page, I don't give a fuck what we're playing. You know what I mean? Big influences are Jimi Hendrix, Andrew Bird, Red Hot Chili Peppers with Frusciante, stuff like that. They have these moments live where they just put themselves into the song. I mean, they just do it in a way that I fucking do it. And I mean, I stole it from them, or they stole it from Jesus, or whatever it is. What I'm saying is, I guess we're gonna kind of slowly go into the darkest part of this performance. There was a reason that they would consider like artists like The Doors or The Who. In a kind of a shaman-like status. Because that really comes from that hypnosis. But the hypnosis was on a different level at that time. Where it was more about... Depends on the fucking shaman, right? But like the idea of a shaman is there's a person dancing around, singing, that would create this experience within people. Look at that, dude. Look at that muscle. Anyway, it'd create altered states, right? It would take you to the spiritual realm, and they would help you realize truths. You know, they would supersede your ADD. They would make you focus, even if you could never focus. All right, if you could never pay attention to detail, there was something in the performance, the energy in the performance, the strength of the character you're watching, because most people play a character when they're on stage. I mean, because nobody's fucking on stage every day of their life. And even if it's not like a character, like a play, it's a character because I don't live under spotlight. So I can't pretend like, oh, this is always me. It's just how I am under spotlight that is the character. A lot of people don't realize that. But what it comes down to is, I know for a fact that we're getting away from these human biorhythms, and we're taking a lot of our rhythms and we're putting them through silicon-based life forms, aka computers and chips and fucking assholes that want to fucking control our data and steal our minds or whatever it is. What it is the biorhythms, the blood, the very synapses is firing in the human brain. Are being modified. They're being modified musically. And music is always the first thing, right? When music was free, it was like, oh yeah, music's free, that's great. And then the quality of music starts taking a decline. But the new kids that were raised on the shit music didn't ever realize what could have been possible had it not been in a decline. So they accept it. They take the mumble rap. They listen to the auto-tune. So they get programmed. They get programmed into these little weird repetitive things of people talking in the computers. And the reason it's catchy or hypnotic is because you've never heard it before, because of thousands of years of evolution, there hasn't been this computer modifying the way a human voice sounds so that you know it in your brain that it's still a human, but you don't know the way it sounds. And so what it comes down to is there's autotune, melodyne, and vocoders that just have changed the way that humans are able to perceive their own voices to other people. And so what it comes down to is that, I keep saying that, it's an extension, you know, it's an extension into a different world, into a silicon world of music. And music is always the one that hits it first. Everybody's worried about augmented reality. Everybody's worried about taking microchips into their fucking skin. Everybody's worried about androids and merging with machines and all this kind of shit. The state of music today is a merger with machines, man. It is a beat. 99.9% of the pop music beats are quantized to some form of a grid. Maybe they're fucking quantized and then unquantized just to give it a realistic effect. But it's all systematically microchipped. It's run, not microchip, but run through a microprocessor. You know what I mean? It's like, hear me out. When you would record a tape, or you record to a vinyl, right? It is a representation of the music. So it's always, recorded music has always been a representation of actual music. And that is where I'm getting at, is we're getting farther and farther and farther away from real people joining with their instruments. Like when I play guitar, right? Or when I play violin, or when I play drums, or when I play bass, or when I play keyboards, or when I play any instrument, I become that sound. I am focusing my entire body and intellect on the sound coming out from the instrument. And so any sound you hear from me is the sound that I intend to be heard, at least in the moment. Now, I do some post-editing. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with making it sound cool, but it's the idea that it has to sound a certain way. You have to do this. You have to do that in order to be a hit, or we're not going to play it on the radio. You have to say this. You have to project that, you know? It's a weird thing, and there's a lot of evil in music. And what I mean by evil in music, it's like my boy Kanye said, dude. There's a lot of war on free thought. They want what they want. They don't want what you got. You know, they love you until you start saying what you really feel. And that's a very dangerous thing. And we're going to end this up with the darkest portion of it. And that's where I was meaning to bring it. Musician deaths. So when you get an artist that plays live, maybe somebody like a Nirvana or like a Jimi Hendrix, and they are more famous now after being dead than they were ever alive because more people were able to hear their recordings than were able to hear them live. So you're only hearing that representation of them. Now, guaranteed, most circumstances, it's a representation of who they are and how they play. So that is the goal of a musician. That is the part that lives on. That is the eternal soul of music, is the recordings that you do, right? But that's not really who you are while you're alive. And one of the biggest struggles that anybody ever has is being accepted for who they are while they're alive. And this can go to any circumstance and any value in any particular person, right? We always want to have value to who we are while we are alive. And so it's very sad that a lot of times these people that are very good go on and they maybe achieve some success, but what they don't achieve is people really, I mean, everybody loved Kurt Cobain, and then they ended up worshiping him rather than listening to what he said. You go on, I love Genius.com for all the lyrics and shit. They do a very good job with their lyrics. It used to be Rap Genius, but then they just became Genius. But if you look up All Apologies, a Kurt Cobain song, and I'm not a Kurt Cobain worshiper, I like him because if you look at his art and you see how dark he was as a person, and you listen to the things he said, it's a good picture. Especially being at the 90s, he was at the last cusp before these DJs and these weird Vegas parties and these mindless zombies of music. He was really trying to fight that because he saw it coming, or he didn't care, or who knows. But if you look at someone like Kurt Cobain and you look at the song All Apologies, there is a line in the song that says, "Feminist assault, everything's my fault. I'll take all the blame, I'll proceed from shame." That's a lyric that is, you'll never find it online. I've looked every major lyric site. They say aqua, seafoam, shame. Aqua, seafoam, shame. Aqua, seafoam, shame. No. They say, find my nest of salt, right? Find my nest of salt, which would make sense if you think of like amphetamine salts or heroin salts, or most drugs are in the form of salt, so they dissolve into liquid, which then gets in your body. That would make sense, but it's find my nest of salt. He's talking about a feminist assault. You know what I mean? Like assaulting a feminist. Everything's his fault. I'll take all the blame, I'll proceed from shame. And they fucking say aqua seafoam shame. Like they fucking have literally censored this dead guy's real lyrics of like things that when you hear what they mean something. And when you're like, I mean the motherfucker had a line in a song saying, "When I swear that I don't have a gun." I mean, why the fuck are you gonna, he repeats over and over and over and over that he swears he doesn't have a gun. He swears he doesn't have a gun. He swears he doesn't have a gun, and then he dies by a gun. Everybody fucking just accepts it. There's more corruption, more documentaries, more in-depth studies in that fucking murder than anybody else. It's not even considered a murder. But that's just one example. That's just Kurt Cobain. He was young in the 27 Club, and everybody could say what they want. But then you got people like Chris Cornell and Scott Weiland, who just, bless their hearts, just died. They were a little bit older. They were a little bit older in the game. And they're like in a weird jaded sense. I mean, Audioslave, man. Like, Light My Way. Last Remaining Light. Show Me How to Live. Gasoline. set it off. I mean, a lot of it was very, like, I don't want to say religious in tone, but it was like me against the world type shit with somebody backing him. And that made that motherfucking bangin'est tracks of all time. And so it just, it's done in a way that you're like, well, why would this guy tie up his neck and beat his dick off to death, right? Because, like I said, everybody wants to be accepted for who they are while they're alive. But in the culture that is evolving around, and people are becoming less and less human. And when I say less and less human, they're less and less on the biorhythm. They're on these electronic rhythms. Like, music is the first thing that merged with the machines, right? Like, I had an acoustic guitar. When I get an electric guitar, and I know how I can merge my brain with what is going on with the electronics, and I get so used to the fucking way that my body can connect to the electrons going through the wires of the electromagnets that fucking reflect on the shit, I'm merging with the machine. When you're programming a drum beat, and then you hit quantize, which just snaps it all into perfect time, you're merging with the machines. And so music, which is the most divine of all art forms, in my opinion, because as Aldous Huxley said, the only thing more divine than silence is music, is it would make sense that the first thing that would go, like the first thing to become a cyborg, would be an autotune rapper. It's like a person who is a cyclops. They're not even a real person anymore. They are changing up what comes out of them into a way that people will accept, because people are so anti-people at this particular moment. They hate everything. They don't want to relate to anything. They don't want deep music. They want music that tells them to drink Molly Percocet, Molly Percocet, Molly Percocet. Like, if you want that, then I have nothing in common with you. If that relates to you and that takes a hold of you and that is who you are, I have nothing to say to you. You are just a lifeless shell that creates devastation to people who've spent years, like Chris Cornell and Scott Weiland, who dealt with the fucking demons of existence, dealt with these devils in the music industry, dealt with everything, and still were coming out on top, but get to the point where they're like, fuck it, like, we tried our best, and I don't want to tear up. No, I'm just kidding, I'm not going to tear up. But what I'm saying is, in those instances, you get them where it feels like all for nothing, you know? It feels like all for nothing. When the humanity behind the drive, I mean, nobody makes music to just fucking have it. I mean, unless you're Diggity Dave, newtherapy.bandcamp.com. People want to share music. And when it stops connecting at that level, when you're alone in your hotel room, on the road, you're on drugs, you got anxiety, but they have ways to pill you through it, like Kanye West, it just destroys you. But in some instances, the way I look at it is you do have a certain amount of energy that you're supposed to be sharing out there with the world. I mean, if you feel driven to do it in the sense of like a performer, right? You really want to share who you are, what you think, and that other part, man, that other source. Because who you are and what you think, if you're a musician and you're a writer and you're a creator, you know that only a certain amount of that is you. Because you can't tell me where your ideas come from. I mean, you can look at something that happens in real life and you can take that idea, but that's only a part of it. It's like when you start applying yourself to it, it just becomes something else. And so these musicians die because the need for them dies. When they feel like unnecessary, when they're putting themselves to war and they're on the losing side. And the winners of the side are these like corporate entities that all they consider and care about is control. I mean, you could say it's money, but it's not money, man. Money has nothing to do with it. If you're fucking, if you own the fucking venue of an artist, if you own the record label, you don't need money. You just need to stay as the main collector of money. You just need the control. You need the power. And you just run over these musicians. You just destroy these lives of people that really have the ability to fucking do amazing things. And when you replace the human biorhythms and the soul of humanity and creation, when you replace that with DJs and drugs and lights and giant crowds of drunk, inattentive, drugged up fucking people, and it's really just a distraction. It's really a distraction from the fact that minimum wage is stagnated, that millennials are just pieces of shit. I mean, you go in and you get all these things where, like, millennials are pieces of shit because they have weird hair, they have shit music, and the culture's eroded around them, but it really comes from music, man. It's music is the most important driver in human existence. You wouldn't watch a movie, you wouldn't watch a Narcos, you wouldn't watch a Netflix, you wouldn't do anything if they didn't have a soundtrack in the background. You wouldn't like driving in cars, you wouldn't be able to fly in airplanes if you didn't have fucking music. And if you didn't have fucking music, you'd be talking to people. And if you talk to people, you'd be like, well, why are we doing this? And that's what nobody wants you to know. They want you to be fucking minimum wage slaves, listening to everything they say so they can manipulate the housing bubbles around you. They can live in their fucking 37-room fucking giant mansions with 600 people and staff working there for them. And you can't even fucking afford an apartment. And you're out there with all these other musicians. You're out there. And you feel in competition with the people that are doing the same thing you are. You feel like, well, I'm not going to listen to their bullshit because my shit's better than that. And once you get into that mindset, then they've completely won. Once you get in the mindset that it's a competition and that music is really about who makes the best, or who makes the most money, or who fucks the most bitches, or who has a private plane. Once you do that to music, the rest of society will soon follow. Once you start talking about asses, start talking about drugs and shooting people, once you start getting to the point where you want to mix Molly and Percocets, everybody's going to die. They might not die physically from drug overdose like most of them would, but they're going to die inside a little bit every day, over time. Because the shaman, that is the music that you are listening to, is a shaman of the underworld. It is a shaman of decay. It is a demon sent to snatch what little light is left from your life. And in a broad display of trying to make it seem like the coolest thing to do, slowly, they take little bits from you until the performer has nothing left and is just a shell of themselves. And the same thing begins to happen to those that once put their faith into. Until, well, we have a rebirth. And if you want to have a rebirth, go to newtherapy.bandcamp.com so you can use me up, chew me up, and spit me out. That's newtherapy.bandcamp.com. All right, we're going to wrap this up, folks. I told you we're going to get dark at the end there. It's funny because I was just trying to make it as dark and sounding as possible while actually still putting the truth in there. So if you don't search for music but truth, well, good luck never having it. And when the truth leaves you, that's the one thing you'll want. All right, bitches, till next time on Alien Radio. We're going to get some guests in here, get some fucking awesome shit. I've been working with Atomic Buzz. Check out Atomic Buzz. Just Google them and look up their shit. I'm going to have them on here. I'm actually working for Steepin on some Egg Brothers, Brothers Egg, some shit like that, or fucking Eggs and Benedict. I don't know what it is, but look for that. Check out Arson Daily. I'm going to have them on the podcast. Had them on Steepin Podcast, which is Jenkins' podcast, or Jenkins had them. I just recorded them. But you know, what I'm saying is, folks, put your attention in, find the light, be happy, remain positive. Unless you're on drugs, as you probably never be. or well, not drugs, but like numb. If you're numb, this ain't for you. If you're dumb, it's probably ain't for you, unless you want it to be. I'm just, I don't know, just getting my thoughts out there on music. Hopefully this made sense. Love you, bitches. Goodbye. And that was it, folks. That was Alien Radio Podcast of the day. Like I said, I'm being an idiot. Music's for everybody. Just find the kinds you like, but don't be afraid to check out other kinds and really go into making each other happy and benefit the artist by supporting them with financials like newtherapy.bandcamp.com, where I do all my independent shit, and you can help for just little bits and little bits of money. It's just all my albums online, so check them out. But anyway, you know, I'd like to say thanks to Angry Angel Energy. And if you want to buy Angry Angel, check out Whole Foods. 50 calories, 50 vitamins, CoQ10, 120 milligrams of caffeine. It's an all-in-one punch. It's amazing and delicious. Comes in two flavors. Also, thanks to Brett Richardson for this backing track here. It's under the tentative name Soul Cyclone. If you want to check it out on Space Rock Instrumentals 2 at newtherapy.bandcamp.com. You know, also, if you want to send us an email, alienradiopodcast@gmail.com. And, yeah, hope you enjoyed it. Maybe I'm nuts about music, but that's what I do the most, so. Yep. Love you guys. Check out the rest of this tune.